ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Lord Krishna shows his universal form, the universal form. I think it's text 22. I wonder if this is the Brahma Samhita tune. Yeah. Tvavangri yugmam anukrishna shri Sar Sarish Pantu Pantau Tvavangri Yugmam Anukrishna Sarish Pantu Gosha Pragosha Ruchiram Raja Kardameshu Tanara Rishta Manasava Vanushrita Lokam Mugda Prabhitavad Upeyatur Antimatro Tvavangri Yugmam Anukrishna Sarish Sarish Ripantau Gosha Pragosha Ruchiram Raja Kargadameshu Tanada Rishta Manasavara Nushrita Nrishtya Lokam Mugda Prabhita Varupeyatur Antimatro Tanagri Yugmana Krishna Sarisha Panto Thank you. Ladies, Krishna Sarisha Pantau Kosha Pragocha Richiram Rajakardameshu Tanada Rishta Manasava Ranushitokam Tao Krishna and Balaram Angri Yugmam Anukrisha dragging their legs Sarish Pantao crawling like snakes Gosha Pragosha Ruchiram producing a sound with their ankle bells. That was very, very sweet to hear. Raja Kardameshu in the mud created by cow dung and cow urine on the earth of Braja Bhumi. Tatnada, by the sound of those ankle bells. Rishta Manasau, being very much pleased. Anushristya, following. Lokam, other persons. Mugda, thus being enchanted. Prabhita Tavat, then again being afraid of them. Upayatu, immediately returned. Antimatro, toward their mothers. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna and Balaram, with the strength of their legs, crawled in the muddy places created in Braj by cow dung and cow urine, their crawling resembled the crawling of serpents, and the sound of their ankle bells was very charming. Very much pleased by the sound of the other people's ankle bells, they used to follow these people as if going to their mothers. But when they saw that these were other people, they became afraid and returned to their real mothers, Jashoda and Rohini. Okay. Purport. When Krishna and Balaram were crawling about Brajabhumi, they were enchanted by the sound of ankle bells. Thus they sometimes followed other people who would enjoy the crawling of Krishna and Balaram and exclaim, "Oh, see how Krishna and Balaram are crawling." Upon hearing this, Krishna and Balaram could understand that these were not their mothers. They were following, and they returned to their actual mothers. Thus the crawling of Krishna and Balaram was enjoyed by the people of the neighborhood, as well as by Mother Jasoda and Rohini and the two children themselves. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatyade Satarane. In the introduction to the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada writes that this Krishna book will be enjoyable by all kinds of people. For those who hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, because they resemble the activities of a young boy and a young girl, they'll be able to appreciate. Yes, here's a nice young boy and here's some nice young girls, and they're going to have nice little activities. So because it resembles material affairs between young girls and a young boy, therefore they'll be able to appreciate it. And they'll be able to derive benefit if they hear from the right source with the right attitude. Of course, to acquire the right attitude, we have 9 other cantos before we get up to the 10th canto. We're supposed to understand that how great Krishna is. And so when we hear about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, we won't take him as to be an ordinary person. Because anyone who takes Krishna as just an ordinary person who's not liberated from the material concept of life will think that Krishna is an object of my competition. Maybe a little bit more powerful than I am, or maybe a lot more powerful, but I'm working on it. Therefore, Krishna says, Avidinanti mamuda manushim tanum ashityam parambhavam ajananto amabhuta maheshwaram. That the fools, they deride at my descending in this human-like form. They don't know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. In the first 9 cantos, we're supposed to understand Krishna's transcendental nature and his supreme dominion over all that be. So when we hear about Krishna coming in a human-like form, we won't become deceived and think he is just an ordinary person. On the other hand, here we are in the 10th canto, and we can see from Srila Prabhupada's purport, there's not a whole lot of philosophy. There is, 10th canto is meant for liberated souls, ultimately. The third class devotee, or the materialist, or the Kanishtha Adhikari, they'll appreciate these Krishna's a nice boy, these are nice girls, but their knowledge is being cultivated so that they won't mistake it as ordinary and have an offensive attitude. On the second, the Madhyama Adhikari, one who's actually liberated from the material concept of life, who's on the spiritual level of consciousness, although that spiritual level is not fully developed, hearing these pastimes, they'll become enlivened and enlightened, because they'll actually be able to hear the pastime and experience it. For the materialists, when they hear the pastime, or those on the material concept of life, or on the material platform, there's not much effect from hearing about Krishna and his activities, because they don't penetrate very deeply, because we're not able to experience Krishna's forms, his qualities, spiritual qualities, his associates, their pastimes, their feelings, which the liberated soul is able to do to some lesser extent, not a full extent. But for those who are actually on the Uttama Adhikari platform, who have already developed the ability to experience by hearing, when they hear, they experience the forms, the qualities, the associates, the pastimes, the feelings. These are all experienced by the topmost devotee. And therefore, they relish hearing about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Now, if we're not experiencing transcendental ecstasy and being fully conscious, just like one is in the pastime itself, then we're probably not Uttamadhikaras. And if we're not feeling alive and enlightened by hearing these pastimes, we may not be fully situated on the Madhyamadhikari platform either. And if we're trying to stay awake during the class, then we're probably somewhere on the lower platform. So what to do? We have to learn how to hear. In other words, we may not spontaneously be able to experience Krishna's pastimes. So therefore, what we can do when we're reading the 10th canto is try to experience what we're reading, because the 10th canto is meant for experience. When our intelligence is developed far enough or enough, then we can actually experience Krishna by just hearing about it. When our intelligence is developed, when we chant Hare Krishna, we'll be able to experience Krishna's names, his forms, his quality, his pastimes. We'll be able to feel Krishna's presence and his name along with his associates and their loving exchanges. Shabhaktivinoda Thakur, in his book called Namahata, he explains that when we're chanting Hare Krishna at the stage of Shraddha, all the way up to Nishtha, then what do we get from chanting? We get the inspiration to continue to chant. It may not seem like much, but it's certainly something. We can see when we begin to chant our rounds during the day, sometimes it's not so pleasant. What seems to be awakened is our minds rather than our intelligence. And therefore, so many thoughts go through, but after a while, one continues to chant. Then after some time, the mind quiets down, and one can actually continuously chant without much effort. It even may become enjoyable to chant. At the stage of Nishtha, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura says in his Namahata, one buys the right, he gives different medals. One of them is base medal, another one I forget the different medals. One is silver, one is gold, one is Chintamani, etc., etc. But he says when we chant Hare Krishna at the stage of Nishtha, spontaneously we remember Krishna's names or forms. Therefore, when we reread this, Krishna and Balaram, so we can try to remember Krishna's form. We're actually supposed to become conscious of Krishna. And Krishna means not K-R-I-S-H-N-A, or here is K-R with a little dot, S with a little dot, N with a little dot. That's not what, it's nice to remember that, better to remember that than something else. But we should actually be remembering Krishna. Here the temple deity, Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish. If we remember Dwarkadish, that's very nice. Of course, here Krishna is very young, so Balagopal. So to remember a picture of Balagopal and Balaram. For that reason, Srila Prabhupada wanted the artist to paint pictures which he called windows into the spiritual world. So if we don't have enough imagination, spiritual imagination, then the artist, we can utilize the artist's spiritual imagination, and we can meditate upon Krishna when we hear Krishna Balaram in this pastime that's being described, crawling in the muddy clay and the cow dung of Vrindavan. And of course, here the Sanskrit is, we have the Sanskrit, Angri Yugmam Anukrishna. Krishna, of course, Krishna means to draw. So Anu means continuously drawing, and Yugmam, the two Angri legs. So they're continuously drawing the legs, which means crawling, on the Gosha, anyhow, on the muddy clay and cow dung of Vrindavan. So to visualize that, that's transcendental meditation. That, there's nothing better than that. Of course, we don't just want to visualize. We want to experience. And so experience means to not only the form, but Krishna has a color. He's blackish. Balaram is whitish. They have different color ornaments. And the more we actually draw, think and meditate in this way, the more we become conscious of Krishna. And at the same time, there's an activity going on. They're crawling. And we, one who has, with our spiritual senses, because actually our senses are spiritual. It's not that we are material senses. Our senses are actually spiritual. When we're looking through our eyes, it's our spiritual senses that are seeing. It's not someone else's seeing with some other senses. It's our spiritual eyes that see, that experience. The only difference is when we experience through our material senses, our vision becomes distorted. Just like we put on colored glasses and we look out through our colored glasses, then everything may be experienced, will be experienced, according to the color the glasses have. If they're pink, everything will appear to be pink. If they're orange, everything will appear to be orange. Similarly, when our senses are covered by the modes of nature, whatever we experience through those modes of nature. But when our senses are purified, then we actually see things as they are. Now, internally, if we hear correctly from the right source and we have the right attitude, then when we visualize Krishna according to the authorized description, then the result is that Krishna appears according to the authorized description. Krishna has unlimited possibilities of expanding himself. So if he sincerely wanted to see Krishna in that form, then he, didadami buddhi yogam tam, he gives us the intelligence to see him in that form, or he appears in our mind in that form. And that's called Krishna consciousness. And the more one becomes absorbed in such a consciousness, then the more one gets Krishna's association, especially when it's done as a service, gopi bharata pada kamalayor dasa dasa anudasa. So we're taking the description that our acharya and disciple succession is giving us, and we're expected to meditate when we get to the 10th canto on this description. So, meditating on Krishna, on this description given to us by the acharyas, is service. And the more we have the service attitude of entering into it, Krishna and Balaram, and seeing them, even smelling the clay and the cow dung, smelling Krishna's body. What does Krishna's body smell like? Does anyone know? What's the aroma of Krishna's body? Aguru. And what is Aguru? What's the principal ingredient of Aguru? Musk. Yes, musk. And has anyone ever smelt musk? Is it pleasant? You didn't like it. What's that? Musk. You know what musk is? From the deer. Did you smell the musk? What did it smell like? Yeah, it's supposed to be so attractive that the deer is running everywhere trying to find out where it comes from. Although it comes from the deer. I've smelled musk. It was really extraordinarily wonderful to smell it. And Krishna's body is emanating this aroma, and of course Balaram also has an aroma, and the clay and cow dung, everything is, when one has transcendental senses, or when our senses are purified, even at the stage of ruchi, everything becomes pleasureful. In the material world, everything is, we're trying to get some pleasure, principally from our tongue, belly, and genitals, to get some sensation of happiness. Or sometimes through our eyes, we're stimulated. But especially through our tongue, we can experience different flavors. But at the stage of Ruchi, everything is flavorful. Every color, every sound, every smell, every touch is just different varieties of pleasure. And Krishna is the maximum pleasure, intensified spiritual pleasure. So to smell Krishna, to hear Krishna, to taste Krishna, to see Krishna, to smell Krishna is intensified spiritual pleasure. So this is not something ordinary for the liberated soul. Just to hear the name of Krishna and Balaram is intense pleasure, but the fact that they're crawling on the ground of Vrindavan, which is also intense pleasure, varieties of pleasure of feeling and tasting and touching and smelling and seeing, would be extraordinarily pleasurable. And we can experience something of that pleasure if we go beyond the material concept of life and we meditate upon this without any distraction. And that takes some faith that actually Krishna and Balaram and the vibrations describing them are not something ordinary. They're actually worth hearing and meditating upon. An ordinary person, for instance, if we offer them this suggestion to meditate upon Krishna and Balaram, they think we're crazy. At best, they think that there are some mythological persons, or if they're historical, they are aborigine cowherd men in a primitive place called Vrindavan. And if you go there now, it's just as primitive as it was. No, not quite as primitive. Now they've advanced. Now they not only have the pigs everywhere, but they have rickshaws and autos everywhere. So now they become somewhat civilized. In the past, they only had clean air and fresh water, ecstatic water and ecstatic air. They had unlimited flowers and happy cows. It was rather barbaric, according to modern estimation. But one has to have some faith that this is not some kind of primitive description of some aborigine cowherd boy in some remote village in the middle of nowhere and doing their ordinary activities every day. One has to have faith that this is actually worth meditating upon, worth appreciating with a sense of gratitude that one has such an opportunity to hear about and associate with Krishna in this way. Then we can actually enter, as Krishna says, bhakti mam abhijananti yavan yas chasmi tatvataha tito mam tatvato gyatva vishate tad anantaram. One can understand me as I am through the process of devotion, and by such devotion one can enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So to become devoted, what is devotion? It begins with shraddha, to focus one's mind and give one's attention to Krishna. The materialists, by nature, they're focusing their mind on a variety of material circumstances and giving their energy in order to either acquire a certain position in the material world, a certain situation with certain types of paraphernalia to gratify their tongue, belly, and genitals, their mind, anger, and words. Or they're averse to these things. They think it's a threat to their materialistic welfare. So that's called material existence. But spiritual life means that we have faith that if I focus my attention and I give my appreciation and my absorption in this particular sound vibrations and utilize them fully, so I'm actually coming to the platform of remembering and experiencing Krishna's names, forms, quality, and activities, then I'll actually become transcendently benefited and enter into the mysteries of Krishna's understanding. So even the cow dung a materialist, when they hear cow dung, they think, these people are really disgusting. Yes, they worship a cow. Krishna has all these cows in Vrindavan, and he doesn't eat any of them. What a waste of time. What a waste of cows. Not only that, but they're worshiping dung and urine. See how barbaric they are. And not only that, but Krishna, God, supposedly God, is crawling through dung and urine. This is ridiculous for a materialist. And for the spiritualist who can appreciate the transcendental nature of Krishna and his activities and the transcendental nature of the cows, can understand that this is all a manifestation of divine love and reciprocation. But it's not so easy to come to that platform. And even ourselves, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, for us, we may not be able to fully accept that there was a man taking Krishna up in the air 800,000 miles in the air, and Krishna's hanging on his neck. He's a whirlwind. Even for ourselves, if we're not fully Krishna conscious, it seems rather unusual. More or less like something our mothers told us when we were young, so we'd go to sleep. And what to speak of a witch who's 24 miles long. But we have to be patient, because 10th canto, we have to understand, 10th canto is really not meant to be meditated upon by the neophyte devotee, because the neophyte devotee has very little access to the 10th canto. We can learn the technique of meditating, but normally when we don't utilize that technique to read, then we're back in our normal state of consciousness, namely the bodily concept of life to some degree. And we're struggling to maintain ourselves in the mood of devotion, even our ordinary life. What to speak of pretending that we're transcendentally situated and always meditating on Krishna and his activities. Therefore, a dynamic life is given to us of utilizing this body in Krishna's service, so gradually our senses and mind can become purified, and we'll be able to become liberated from the material concept of life. We'll be able to actually see Krishna as the object of love rather than the object of trying to get something from him. We'll be able to see the devotees as association so that we can actually enter into Krishna consciousness, and especially by worshiping the deities in the temple, cooperation for the service of the deities in the temple, the deities in our house, wherever, and to spread the Sankirtan movement to the innocent. So when we see the innocent, we won't become envious of them, dividing them up according to whether they can give us something or whether they won't give us something or whether or not they're trying to take something away from us. We'll be able to see the innocent as objects of Krishna's mercy that we can be instruments for, and others who are antagonistic, that we try to avoid them because we don't have the power to act as a proper instrument for Krishna to help them. Therefore, rather than getting entangled with them, we avoid them. So if we live in that vision, then we can cultivate our Krishna consciousness and therefore become uncovered from the modes of material nature and eventually come to the platform where we'll be able to experience properly what's actually going on in the 10th canto. If we read the 10th canto, we think we're actually understanding something without actually experiencing what it really is, then our understanding is good, but it's not very deep. So to get that understanding, we have to read the other cantos and follow the process given to our acharyas to even understand the other cantos first, but to speak of the 10th canto. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Thank you for a wonderful class. I think you made a pretty valid point in terms of understanding the other cantos of Bhagavatam before coming to the 10th canto, because I was just thinking when you were speaking that really the Bhagavatam is more pronounced in terms of, like, let's say, greats, like leadership, like Prithu Maharaj, for instance, Dhruva Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, and so many different great saints. And they were actually absorbed in just doing service for Krishna. Isn't it like Prithu Maharaj, although he was an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, but his example was that he was a great king. And he performed so many yajnas, and he performed so many activities in terms of serving Krishna, spreading Krishna consciousness. So it appears that for us, the 10th canto is quite... Is it really possible, for us to understand all these different intricacies, these particular associations of Vrindavan? Although, sometimes devotees speak very highly of these things, but it appears to me that the previous cantos really do express the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, that service to Krishna. And by that activity, one can really be liberated. Does that mean that we eventually do understand the 10th canto Bhagavatam? Is that a guarantee? Is that something that we can look forward to? Or
I guarantee, and if it doesn't work out, try and catch me in your next life.
I'm saying, if it doesn't work out, is there a loss? In other words, if someone is just absorbed, in the preaching activity, just trying to get other people, like for instance, Prabhupada said that reading is very important, but he said that to induce others to read is real preaching.
No, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yujaja maya arpita manobudhira mame vaishatya samshaya. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time, you should follow your prescribed duty of fighting. With your mind and activities fixed on me and everything engaged in me, you'll attain to me without any doubt. So when we're engaged in fighting for Krishna, we should also see things in Krishna consciousness. It's not exactly... seeing things in Krishna consciousness means to see things in a simpler way than normally we do in a materialistic consciousness. Understand that these are all Krishna's eternal servants. I'm Krishna's eternal servant. I'm trying to please Krishna and his representatives by spreading Krishna's glories, because that's what they want me to do. If we see like that, then that's perfect meditation. Then we're actually in meditation, in transcendental service.
Because if you're living in a, let's say in a city temple, it's when you do your daily activities in a city temple, and I don't mean just the city, but I'm just saying in this atmosphere that we're in Los Angeles, California, or Chicago, or New York. It's really very difficult for a normal devotee to think about the pastimes of Vrindavan. You're absorbed in a lot of other activity, and sometimes some people may think it's very mundane. In other words, am I making sense to you? I'm just trying to say that sometimes the activities of a daily life of a devotee in a temple may not be really thinking about the pastimes of Vrindavan, but it may be in the pastimes of New Dwarka, or,
Well, probably never, we have to follow our acharyas, probably never suggested that we artificially try to think about Vrindavan.
Yeah.
In the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada says we should either think about Krishna's pastimes when Krishna was speaking to Arjuna on the battlefield Kurukshetra, or his pastimes in Vrindavan. So we should think about, first of all, if we want to remember Krishna at all, we have to accept the fact that everything belongs to him.
Yeah.
As soon as we forget that, then we're not going to remember Krishna at all, either in Vrindavan or in through the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita gives us the understanding of how everything is Krishna's and meant for Krishna's service. So Krishna is not interested in us walking around you know, thinking about him in Vrindavan and dropping the maha plate on the floor. He's looking, because it's not our body, it's meant for Krishna's service, so everything should be done with care and attention in his service. And that's devotional service.
So the, my point would then be, so those activities are non-different than Krishna's activities in Vrindavan?
That is.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah, so...
Just like if you were in Dwarka.
Right.
And you were serving Krishna prasadam, and you walked in and you spilled it all over Krishna. Krishna said, what's going on? He said, well, I was thinking of you in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'd appreciate it very much.
Yeah. So you know, somebody who's sweeping a floor here in the temple room, and they're thinking they're doing it for Rukmini Dwarkadish, that's not different, right, than thinking about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord.
Yeah,
if we were actually in that consciousness,
we wouldn't at all think it was anything different. We wouldn't really care whether it was different or not. There may be some difference from the spiritual platform between Krishna's activities in Vrindavan and that in Dwarka. But it's just like if you have the Himalayan mountains, one may be a couple of meters shorter than the other, but you wouldn't think, well, this is not a very high mountain, the other one's high. They're practically the same from our point of view.
Well, see, and that's mainly where I'm coming from. In other words, you can be washing pots in New Dwarka for Rukmini Dwarkadish, or you could be washing pots in Vrindavan for Radha Shyama Sundar or Krishna Balaram. But there's no difference in that activity, though, right?
You know, you'll be in ecstasy. You know, this pot will turn into a spiritual pot. Because it is a spiritual pot.
Yeah.
Because it's not that it's going to turn into anything else. It's already spiritual.
Yeah.
Because it's Krishna's pot. It's his energy. But we'll be, if we're devotional, then we'll experience it as a spiritual pot. And we'll be in ecstasy. And we'll actually fall in love with the pot because it'll remind us of Krishna. Probably gives that example. Just like if you see the shoes, some shoes on the street, you won't be very much impressed by them. But if you see the shoes of your child, you'll actually become very affectionate to them because they'll remind you of your child. So when things are done for Krishna, they'll remind us of Krishna, and therefore we'll fall in love with you in the pot we're washing because it'll actually become spiritual. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. When you were describing in your class about the different levels of consciousness, like Uttama, Madhyamadhikari, and Kanishtadhikari, and lower than that, it came to my mind that the time when Krishna was perceived by different people, when he was walking in the arena.
Oh, when he walked into the arena.
And the jnanis, the impersonalists, the devotees, the demons, how they were perceiving Krishna, that came to my mind. Then another thought came to my mind from a long time ago when I was distributing books at the airport. I offered a book to this person walking by, and he was angry. He chastised me. He said, I don't read any other books. The only book I read is Krishna book. And I was surprised. And then he says, what do you have there anyway? Let me see it. And he came closer, and then he looked at the books I had. He said, oh, same author. It's the same author. I said, you didn't know about it? He said, no, the only book I read is Krishna book. Then I said, well, how long ago you got this book? How long ago? He said, this book was given to me about 25 years ago. And he described all the details, how he got the book by a Matthew or lady, how much money he gave. He wasn't very happy about it. He said he gave some big amount and then he was asked for more. Anyway, so then but the whole point I'm just trying to make is that based on the analogy that you were making about the different perceptions, so I thought, well, this person, it appears that he has never been in a temple. He has never been in association with devotees. But up to the point when I met him, he was still very faithful, and he was very, like, even defending that the best book is the Krishna book. So my question to you, what would you classify that personality, more or less, in which?
He's obviously he's gotten some appreciation for Krishna consciousness. Krishna book is not just pastimes. This Prabhupada's injecting philosophy so that one can understand what's going on there. There's Krishna, even the Krishna book is speaking Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada's utilizing the Krishna book not only to give us the idea of Krishna's pastimes, but also a thorough understanding of the philosophy too. So we can't think that this person was just an Uttama Adhikari after reading the Krishna book. But anyhow, he developed an appreciation for the philosophy, obviously, for something about Krishna. Thank you very much. Krantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.